Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and apricot, do I?
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us.
Today we're out here at College of the Redwoods in the greenhouse, and we're talking with Bert Walker. Bert is a retired agriculture instructor for College of the Redwoods, as well as one of the local high schools. Bert, how did you get your start in agricultural instruction?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and I went through the high school agriculture program and got my degrees in agriculture. But I never imagined that I would teach agriculture. Teaching agriculture, I've had some really, really outstanding students and long-time relationships from teaching. So 40 years later, I finally am retired.
And that has led to the reason why we are interviewing you, and that is about your hard cider apple orchard in Fortuna. How are cider apples different from eating apples?
Some of them you can't eat. They have all kinds of different characteristics. They often very acetic or astringent, some bitter ones, some so sweet that all there is sugar. And that, of course, was selected for the alcohol content in the finished product. And some are delicious. Some, there's one called Kingston Black that it's called a bitter sharp. So it has sugar, it has bitters, it has sours, has strong apple flavor, and it makes a varietal cider. Don't have to blend it with other apples.
Uh-huh. That's an amazing thing to me when I taste eating apples is just the variety. Everything tastes like an apple should when I taste some of these really old varieties, but they taste so different from each other.
Yeah, and the hard cider, I suppose people have been eating apples as long as they've been making hard cider, but, you know, alcohol has a fascination for almost every culture, and so there's been a lot of selecting of the hard cider apples for literally hundreds and hundreds of years from that.
I've heard that, like, from a seed, you could end up with anything from almost a viney shrub sort of thing all the way up to a giant tree.
Probably it's going to be a pretty good-sized tree. Most of them are going to be pretty good-sized trees, unless it's crossed with a crab apple. But a wide difference in the fruits because of that parentage. It could be small, it could be like crabs, it could be big, juicy things. The apple's origin is from the Tianshan, which is a mountain range in China, but it's really way to the west. And it also includes Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Kyrgyzstan, that part of the world. There are pictures in a book of people selling the apples that they've collected, the wild apples, and that's its origin. And they have them down in a basket. They look like any basket of apples you'd buy in a market here. There's all that range from large, tasty, good apples to the little tiny crab apples that tend to be a little too astringent to eat without cooking them. So sure, there's a lot of variation that's going to occur whenever you grow from seed.
Since apples aren't generally propagated by seed, how do you propagate apples?
By grafting. Today, most of the rootstocks that we use commercially were developed either at a Malling Research Station in England, Somerset. Recently, there have been a lot of interest in the Russian rootstocks.
And then apples do differently in different places. I think when they brought apples over from Europe to the United States, they found that the same variety didn't taste the same here as it did in Europe.
That's just environment. It's genetically the same plant. Mm-hmm. The environment has a great deal to do with quality of anything. Apples, particularly in the East, need to be fairly hardy, cold hardy. And if they're in a spot that's colder than the tree can stand, they will be damaged. And if they're in a spot like Fortuna, where it's colder in the summer than apples usually grow, you don't get enough, they're called heat units, in the summertime, so you don't get the sugar, you don't get as much flavor in the apples. Last summer was a classic case of just very cool, very cold, and the quality of the apples and the production just wasn't there. You need some heat, and in the winter they have to have chill, below 40 degrees, sufficient to break their dormancy. If they don't, they won't break dormancy for a long, long time. I have some cold hardy varieties that don't put on leaves till June, so I don't think I'm going to grow them here.
Oh yeah.
It's a little bit late. If you don't have that diversity, it's hard to try things to see what's going to grow in a particular climate. So I will eventually be down in the number of varieties, but right now I'm testing a lot of stuff.
Uh-huh. You know, it's interesting. You're moving to the direction of producing hard cider, and we're going to talk about hard cider in a bit. But hard cider kind of has an interesting history. It was a way to prevent scurvy, you know, aboard ship. Apparently the water quality here in the United States was pretty bad.
And Europe.
And Europe was pretty bad. People were getting sick from drinking the water, and you could dilute hard cider with water to kill the bacteria. But then the cider business dropped off during Prohibition, and we really haven't seen the cider business be as strong since then. How did you decide to make hard cider for the first time, and then how did you decide to turn that into a business?
Well, I used to teach high school, and part of what I did with the FFA was fundraisers. And so about 1972, we got a cider grinder press, and someone donated a bunch of apples, and we made juice. Pushed all the tables and desks aside in my room and put the grinder in the middle of the room and made so much noise that the teacher downstairs came up and started complaining, and I handed him a gallon of cider, and he said, oh, and went back downstairs. And we went ahead and produced a lot of cider and sweet juice. Sold it and made some money, but I put some of the cider that was a funny color and a little funny taste underneath of a sink at home and forgot about it. When I came home one day, one of them had blown up. Uh-huh. And the others tasted pretty good, so I've been making it ever since. That's how I got started.
Okay. And now you're thinking about right now moving into the stage of taking these apples from your orchards that you've developed and starting a business making hard cider. How did you decide to move from kind of more of a hobby to a business?
I made juice with my students. I've always been fairly enterprising and had something going on. But making the hard cider is a challenge. There wasn't anyone locally doing it, so I felt like the apples were available. I found some land. Why not try it? And so now, what, 7, 8 years later, I still can't make commercial hard cider. Uh-huh. It's very, very challenging to get a consistent product that holds up in the bottle and do it container after container after container, batch after batch after batch, and have some continuity in flavor. One of the biggest problems is getting it to fermented, but most Americans like a little sweetness in the cider, more than the Basque, for example. So I put a little bit of sugar in, just a little bit, to give it a semi-sweet taste. But the yeast isn't dead, so the yeast starts converting that sugar to CO2 and alcohol, and well, the bottles blow up, or if they don't, the champagne bottles, you open the top and you lose about 2/3 of it. It comes out as a fountain. I'm still learning how to make it. I haven't made a commercial quantity. There are limits on what you can do for yourself as a hobby, and that's where I'm staying with it. And when I've learned how to do it, I really want to market it.
Before Prohibition, how do you suppose people made hard cider to sell successfully? Do you think maybe they didn't make a consistent product, but they didn't really care? People now are a little more sensitive to wanting the exact same taste every time they open a bottle?
Well, I think in the U.S., it was farm cider, and each farm produced its own unique thing. And if it was a decent beverage, then they could sell some. It was also a form of payment. Farm workers were often paid in England and the U.S. in a certain quantity of cider. And so cider had a different status. As you mentioned, the water wasn't fit to drink, so the cider became a beverage. And when you have people working, last thing you want to do is get sick on the water. So they would have a cider allotment, and they were welcome to drink it while they were working, as well as a quantity to take home. I think farm cider was probably the more common thing, a commercial bottling kind of operation. I'm not going to say they didn't exist, but they were not all that common. It was more of a localized regional product that each farm site did. England's had a history of marketing this, but they still, even today, a large number of small cider producers in Somerset. There's a really great book called A Somerset Pomona, and in the book, the author talks about the farm ciders and where someone might get them and that they sell for a premium and how they're different than their commercially bottled products. And they have some big cider operations. There's Mangers in Ireland, and they sponsor rugby, international rugby, and produce a lot of cider. And I recently explored their website and sent them an email to find out their varieties because their climate is as similar to Fortuna as I can find. Mm. That's the newest varieties I'm adding, is that in my test. There goes another 7 years. I'm going to be over 70 before this gets in place.
Well, that's, you're making me think, too, just about how when something ends, like with Prohibition and the cider making ended, that you lose this, you know, institutional knowledge about how to make cider.
I think that beer is a product you can make all year round. During Prohibition, it was easier to make alcohol from grains and from a variety of fruits, including grapes, and distill them or to produce some kind of concentrated alcohol and get it into the speakeasies. Mm-hmm. And that apple is an extensive material. It just requires more volume. And you don't have the factory kind of everyday production that you can get from beer and distilled alcohol and that kind of thing. So I think the reason that Apple popularity went down was just that beer was cheap and available and easily moved around in the country at that time.
And then, of course, my last question has to be, does an apple day keep the doctor away? Because I'm sure you probably eat at least an apple a day.
No, my wife probably does, but I don't. But I probably drink one a day.
Well, this is Jennifer Bell out here at College of the Redwoods in the greenhouse, and I've been talking with Bert Walker.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and apricot, I do.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.